All right, good morning, and welcome to the Poetry Show, starting about 5 minutes early. We are recording, and I want to welcome my good friend and host of this program, Janet Harrison, who's looks like she's up and about in her study or something. There's books behind her, but there's always books behind Janet, so... Anyway, good morning, Janet. How are you doing?
Good morning, John. Waking up.
Right. I know it's a little early, but...
Stayed up too late last night reading.
Oh, really? What were you reading, some of these poems for today, or
No, I was reading a mystery novel.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. What's your latest mystery author, or are you going back to a favorite of some sort?
Now, this was a Victorian mystery by Jen Westerson. It was a Sherlock Holmes knockoff.
I'm not familiar with that either, so give me a hint.
It was just a Victorian mystery that took place with... So it was fun.
All right.
I stay up too late reading.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
It was a library book. I had to return it.
Somehow, from our discussion last night, I'm concluding that we're on to moon poems today, of one sort or another. And
yes,
I was reading the ones you sent me last night, and it's great. But I don't know which one you want to start with. How do you want to begin?
I want to start with moon fishing.
Ah, okay. Do you want to read that?
No, I want you to read that.
Okay,
one.
I'll read that one.
That's such a favorite of yours.
Well, it is, because I think one of the earlier shows that we did at Shepherd, you know, you came up with that poem, and I just loved it. Liesl Mueller, right? A German American.
Yes, she came to this country when she was 14, speaking no English.
Yeah.
and became a very famous poet and won the Pulitzer Prize, I believe it was, or was the National Book Award, one or the other, I can't remember which, for her collected poems. And
yeah.
Went blind late in life, but continued to write.
Well, that sounds a little bit like me. I keep going, you know, slightly blind from macular, but I haven't written that many poems yet. I got to catch up with her. So anyway, moon fishing. Well, I just love this poem, and I don't know why it connected with me so much. But and I had not even heard of Liesl Mueller before Janet introduced her to me. Anyway, this is it's not a very long poem, but it's let's see whether I can read it right. Moon fishing. When the moon was full, they came to the water, some with pitchforks, some with rakes, some with sleeves and ladles, and one with a silver cup. And they fished until a traveler passed them and said, "Fools, to catch the moon, you must let your women spread their hair on the water. Even the wily moon will leap to that bobbing net of shimmering threads, gasp and flop till its silver scales lie black and still at your feet." And they fished with the hair of their women till a traveler passed them and said, "Fools, do you think the moon is caught lightly with glitter and silk threads? You must cut out your hearts and bait your hooks with those dark animals. What matter you lose your hearts to reel in your dream?" And they fished with their tight, hot hearts till a traveler passed them and said, "Fools, what good is the moon to a heartless man? Put back your hearts, get on your knees, and drink as you never have, until your throats are coated with silver and your voices ring like bells." And they fished with their lips and tongues until the water was gone and the moon had slipped away in the soft, bottomless mud. Wow. I just think that's a It's almost psychedelic, you know, the transformations going on there. Thank you so much for introducing that poem to me. Was that an earlier one or a later one? Do you know in her writing career?
I don't know when she wrote that one. Yeah. I really don't.
But
it's always.
I love the traveler. You know the you know each the way it sort of ascends the poem ascends in its meaning. With different messages from the traveler. That's just a great structure. Have you seen that before? That something similar to that?
There's a Yiddish story about carrying the donkey, where you might be familiar with, that has sort of the same structure.
Yeah.
Where a man is riding a donkey and his son is walking by him, and the people come by and say, you know, to the man, you know, you shouldn't be riding and let your son walk. So he gets off and he puts the son on the donkey and he's walking, and then somebody else berates him for letting, you know, for the son riding the donkey, his aged father walking. So they both get on the donkey, and then somebody berates them for them both being on the donkey because it's too much for the donkey to carry. So they wind up carrying the donkey and with a traverse, and they drop the donkey on a bridge and the donkey drowns. But it's sort of like the same thing. The fools keep coming and changing what they're going to do. It's a traditional Yiddish story.
It seemed a little bit familiar, but it seemed I couldn't remember anyone that preceded it this kind of structure. I love the way that she has different resolutions as she goes through each of the verses there.
But nobody ever catches the moon.
Right, right. Well, yeah. Right, and what matter you lose your hearts.
And the imagery is so beautiful. The language is so beautiful.
It is. What matter you lose your hearts to reel in your dream, you know, and and what good is the moon to a heartless man?
True.
It's just it was great, a beautiful playing with words.
That always amazes me that English was not her first language.
Does she write poetry in German too?
No.
Only in English, huh? Oh, that is kind of odd. Did she ever comment upon that? Probably did, but
she wrote about how it was coming as to the country as a refugee and how difficult it was. It was after World War II, I believe.
It was after World War II.
Yeah. Okay. After World War II.
So
she was born in a German-speaking area of Poland, I believe, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, Silesia, right. That would be, that was Hitler's excuse, right? Those are all Germans there. We need to have that. I think that was one of his lines. The Polish Corridor.
Yes.
The moon has a prominent place in poetry, right?
Yes.
The light in the middle of the night. It probably goes back a long way, right? Do you have any sense of how widespread the moon as an image and theme is?
Oh yes, it shows up in Western poetry. It shows up in Asian poetry. It's very prominent in Asian poetry. There's that famous haiku. I think it was by Ryokan. The thief left it behind, the moon at my window.
Yeah, right, the thief. Well, you have some other poems here on this subject, tell me
about
that.
And this next one is a different take it just disappeared. Come on, come back. There you are. On fishing in the moon. And this one, I think it's best just to float with the imagery and not try and test it too much for against reality, but just enjoy the conceit. And it's called The Old Woman in the Moon, by Michael Bazette. He's written several books, mostly published by Milkweed Edition, lives in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And he dedicated this to Ernestine Hemingway. Not to Ernest Hemingway, but to Ernestine Hemingway.
Is that his daughter or wife or something?
I don't know whether it was that or just a coincidence of the name.
Right.
But anyhow, this is The Old Woman and the Moon, and I'm reading from the poets.org site, which is a marvelous source of information. She was an old woman who fished alone from a skiff in the Sea of Tranquility. And she'd gone 85 years now without a fish. Not even a dusty rock bass had struck her night crawler, though the worm was fat and finely bristled and covered in slime and interminable in the airless waste. Her neck was thin and creased with lines the sun had written, and her skin gone fine as paper. But this was not the first thing one noticed upon seeing the old woman in the skiff. No, it was her eyes that were the color of the moon, and cheerful in the reflected light, like two bone-white plates waiting for sliced cake on a table. They were quietly empty and waiting for something good, and they were not at all defeated. In the skiff, there was a bottle of wine. It was the wine of the country and tasted of mineral and sunlight, and the green glass of the bottle was beaded with drops of condensation, which was an odd thing, thought the woman, because the moon is an arid place and the air is thin as hope. The hopes of a widow casting her line with its moist worm into the scattered gravel so that bits of gray dust clung to its meatiness. The old woman pulled the cork out with her teeth and began to drink and set the bottle on the bench and rested one hand on a wooden thwart and said, "The wine is good. It tastes of the country and of loneliness and also the moon, which is where I fish, because it is the thing that I was born to do."
Oh, right, you're right. I was born to fish on the moon. Or I was born to fish the moon. Which is it, Nancy? Born, which is where I fish because this is the thing I was born to do. You know, she was an old woman. The way it starts, I kept thinking of the old woman who lives in a shoe. Was that?
Yes.
Can I reread parts of that and just sort of get it more in my mind here? Like all of us on radio, when we hear things, sometimes it's easier to do repeats to keep it in your mind if you haven't got the text right in front of you. She was an old woman who fished alone from a skiff in the Sea of Tranquility, which is one of the craters of the moon. Is that, am I right?
Yes. Yes, that's the beginning of the suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
Here she is on the moon, fishing in the Sea of Tranquility.
Not even.
And she'd gone 85 years now without a fish.
Right. But that's what she does. That's what she does. So why did this poem, stick out to you? It doesn't have the same kind of structure or meaning as the Liesl Müller poem, but it's kind of like taking it to a slightly different level, the suspension of disbelief, which is there in the Liesl Müller poem too. But you sort of know it all along. It's she's playing with the disbelief, actually, in the different verses and with the traveler that comes in. And objects to the illusion a little bit. This is a little different than that.
I thought the description was absolutely stunning in this poem. I liked it. No, it was her eyes that were the color of the moon and cheerful in the reflected light, like two bone-white plates waiting for sliced cake on a table.
Right.
They were quietly empty and waiting for something good, and they were not at all defeated. I thought that was a lovely piece of description.
Oh, yeah, it's really
in the middle
nice.
Of the poem. And right. Then the description of the bottle of the wine with the condensation, which is unusual for the arid moon, and her drinking the wine and saying this is good,
right.
But I'm doing what I was born to do, fishing on the moon.
Well, that's it's beautiful. The I like the this line here. It was the wine of the country and tasted of mineral and sunlight, and the green glass of the bottle was beaded with drops of condensation. Which was an odd thing, thought the woman, because the moon is an arid place and the air is thin as hope. I like that, the air is thin as hope. That's the hopes of a widow casting her line. She too is, or he too, is playing with the suspension of disbelief there in a very nice way. Interesting. This is a fairly recent poem.
He turns to the wine later and says, the wine is good. It tastes of the country and of loneliness and also the moon, which is where I fish, because it's the thing I was born to do. So he ends with the wine imagery and her fishing in the moon.
Right. But actually, it's kind of like, as a poetical device, you are, poetry is a lot of, could be called fishing and on the moon.
Yes.
Right? I mean, in some ways, that's a, right. So that the moon is, you know, always with us as a symbol of something. It has a, it interesting, it has almost automatically symbolic meanings. And not everything in the world, you know, does. You can think of a million objects that without construction, don't have a symbolic meaning. But the moon almost intuitively does, right? I mean, you, maybe it's because we've read so many poems and songs about moons, but I don't know. Well, let's try another one. That's very recent, right? That's 2018. Looks like that was published originally in the Tin House. So must be a periodical,
a journal. Or
journal, yeah. and whereas Lisa Mueller, that poem probably goes back quite a ways, right? Is she still around? Is she still living?
No, she died a few years ago.
Right.
The next poem was by one of my teachers, Nan Fry, and it's from her book, Relearning the Dark. Nan Fry has died, but when I went to the Writers' Center years past, she was one of the teachers I had before I went to Spaulding in 2012. And this is called The Female Subject Addresses the Male Critic. And it starts out with a quote by Frank Allen, who's the male critic of the title. And the quote goes, "It's hard not to group the following subjects together as traditional female subjects. Night, horses, a fisherman, the moon, rain in a graveyard, a lighthouse keeper, an unborn child, a lost bride, a branch in moonlight, angels in autumn, a patient, a beginning, Frank Allen." So he's ruling out these, he's denigrating these subjects as being female subjects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And so Nan Fry wrote this reply, "A female subject addresses the male critic. I'll be a horse and come thundering out of the page at you, or a fisherman catching your eye in my hook. You can't spit me out. I'm lodged in you like an unborn child, the bride you abandoned. That's why you're drawn to rough, lost women. You hover around them hoping they'll singe your wings. Then you could stay in one place. The lighthouse keeper would stop following you with his beam that slices the night into wedges. You could look at a branch in the moonlight without hearing the angels of autumn, their fiery songs. The rain would still remind you of graveyards. You'd learn to love water, how it slips through your fingers, how it eats at the rock. Be patient. It's a beginning."
Well, that's a great reply. It really is. Yes. "I'll be a horse and come thundering out of the page at you, or a fisherman catching your eye in my hook." I love that. You can't spit me out. I'm lodged in you like an unborn child. The bride that you abandoned. That's why you're drawn to tough, lost woman. You hover around them, hoping they'll singe your wings. Then you could stay in one place. The lighthouse keeper would stop following you with his beam that slices the night into wedges. You could look at a branch in the moonlight without hearing the angels of autumn, their fiery songs. That's a great line. Though rain would still remind you of graveyards, you'd learn to love water, how it slips through your fingers, how it eats at the rock. Be patient. It is a beginning. It's a beginning. It's beautiful. Now, if I was being, a noisy guy and somebody replied to me with that, I would have to shut up for a while. So, anyway, I like that a lot. Be patient. We were just, Carol and I last night were just watching, we've been watching a number of shows on Iceland since we're planning on taking a cruise there in a couple of weeks to Iceland and Greenland. And, we've been blown away by what water can do to rock over the ages there. So it's very, very... That rang a bell with me, too. When did she write... When did this is Nan Fry. What's her back?
Yeah, she probably wrote that probably in the 90s of last century, I would guess. It was published in Relearning the Dark. I can't remember the date of that book.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only book she ever published. She taught at the Writers' Center for many years. She was very talented. And that poem just has always been a favorite of mine.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Hey, I found a poem and a song that we could take a little break with here from Nora Jones,
sure,
called The Moon Song. And then we could close with another one after that, if that's good with you. Let me just... This is a very moody tune. I know it'll seem scratchy to you on your side, but it'll be fine over the air.
I wanna find out where the moon goes when it leaves the western sky. Night dissolves again till morning, Azure turns to gold. I'm gonna sleep with one eye open, I'm gonna keep the shades half drawn, nearly silent, dressed in shadows, lines and colors fall. Lines and colors fall. Just watch her go. Sky, and night dissolves again till morning,
Well, I thought that was kind of an appropriate theme song, so to speak, for some of our poems this morning. I believe you have another poem there.
I do, but I just want to comment on the song for a moment. Yeah, the song lyrics are very poetic in that, you know, night dissolves against the morning, azure turns to gold. That's a beautiful description of dawn. That's one of my favorite songs.
Well, I'm glad I picked that one then. That's one of Nora's beautiful songs. That's true.
And she's got such a great voice for it.
Oh, she does. You know, she does. Yeah. There's so many great musicians recently, you know, that are so talented. I listened to, for example, music from the recent Del Fest, Del McCrory's sort of bluegrass festival, and there was a singer on there called Molly Tuttle, who I'd never heard of before. But, oh my gosh, you know, just heartbreaking and a beautiful play, unbelievable, you know, guitar player, actually. She makes Doc Watson seem slow. So there's a lot of new talent out there. Anyway, so let's continue with our moon theme here. I think you have another poem.
Yes, I do. This is by someone called a poet I wasn't familiar with, T.E. Holm, Hulme. And he was part of the Imagist movement, which Ezra Pound popularized, and Amy Lowell and some of the other people worked in.
Right.
He was born in 1883 in England, and he was killed in action during World War I. So we lost another poet to World War I.
What was the other famous poet that died there that, not Robert Graves, but a friend of his?
Wilfred Owen,
that's right. Yeah, okay, wow.
He was a friend of Siegfried Sassoon's. He and Sassoon had a very complicated relationship.
Okay.
And they asked Robert Graves to read something at a memorial for World War One, and instead of reading something patriotic, he read Wilfred Owen's.
Well, what a great thing.
They didn't ask him again.
We need to call him up again if we could have him read another poem. All right, this looks like it's a very short little piece here. So
it is, but it's very and it rhymes. It's a different kind of poem. It's a little just four line poem, above the dock. Above the quiet dock in midnight, tangled in the tall mast's corded height, hangs the moon. What seems so far away is but a child's balloon. Forgotten after play.
Right. Again, the suspension of disbelief in only four lines.
Yes.
Well, that, you know, it's interesting that is, I hadn't really thought of it quite that way, but in each of these moon poems, and a little bit in the song too, actually, this suspension of disbelief that you're sort of, you accept without much protest, right? You expect to suspend your disbelief perhaps when you're talking of the moon. You know, it's like the first thing you should go to rather than a, you know, your a geological, excuse me, or a, what would be the right word? whatever the... You know, the science of the moon, you know, might be draw most people. But I think we're intuitively drawn to, you know, its poetical history a little bit, or its poetical context. Until you really mentioned it, I wasn't bothered at all by the suspension of disbelief. I have to go back and, we're playing with the real versus the imagined in each case. And that was it's great. It's a treat. You know, illuminating. There must be a lot of other moon poems. I looked at was searching through poets.org for poems that had moon in them. They came up with like 10, 15 pages of them. So, you know,
yes.
These aren't the only ones.
These are just the ones I thought were particularly striking and worked well with each other.
It's a, if you are listening to the program out there and you you know, have poetical ambitions yourself, or you know, you might start with the moon and see where you can go, since it's, you're probably going to find some common ground with most of humanity there, I would think. Well, that's there we have about 30 minutes, Janet, of just marvelous poems. And do we have further to go, or you want to wind it up here?
I think we can end it up there, and just I think that's a good assignment, you know, to try with the moon, the assignment that people have written about, and try and do something original. I mean, not just really fake original, but something, you know, just think what the moon meant to you at some moment, or you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You know, blend things in, and you can read Dorian Lowe's Facts About the Moon, which is available online, which I didn't suggest because it's got a bad word in it.
Okay. Yeah,
I couldn't read on the radio.
I know, we want us not to be too profane in the process. That's good. Dorian, I think I have seen that poem, actually. I think I saw that today, yesterday when I was looking at moon poems. Well, thank you so much, and I think it's a great little theme for a show. By the way, you had another poet, Diane. Is it Diane Blakely?
Blakely, yes.
That you were thinking about. Can we work on that next week?
Yeah.
And I'll try to see if I can find some of her poems online too. I don't have a.
I'm going to copy some of them. I have the book.
That'd be great. Yeah, if you just copy a couple.
And then what you want to do is look up some of her. It's duets with Robert Johnson, the great blues player.
Yeah.
So we'll play some of the songs that were the source material from the for the poems.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. Cool. Let's do that. That sounds great.
So I'll try and find songs that also have things available on YouTube.
All right. Well, Janet, as you know, every day is gravy. and so I'm hoping that we'll both be here next week, you know, to enjoy some more poetry. And thank you so much was on a moment's notice, on a minute's notice, you know, going out and scouring for moon poems last night. And it was great. All right, folks, you've been listening to The Poetry Show on Enlightened Radio. By the way, there's a website associated with this that we started years ago. I don't know how much we've been using it, called poetry.enlightenedradio.org. And I do post the podcasts there, as well as on podcast.enlightenedradio.org. So if you got any interest in, you can also comment, actually, if you want to, on poetry.enlightenedradio.org. There's a comment on the blog page. So maybe we'll start using that site a little bit more if people want to get involved and comment and stuff. All right. Take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next. See you next week on The Poetry Show. Bye-bye.